You're not real. You're not real.
What? You are? Is any of it real? I mean, look at this. Look at it! A world built on fantasy.
Synthetic emotions in the form of pills.
Psychological warfare in the form of advertising.
Mind-altering chemicals in the form of
food.
Brainwashing seminars in the form of media.
Controlled isolated bubbles in the form of social networks.
Real? You want to talk about reality? We haven't lived in anything remotely close to it since the turn of the century.
Turned it off.
Forgot the batteries. Snacked on a bag of GMOs while we
tossed the remnants in the ever-expanding dumpster of the human
condition. We live in branded houses, trademarked by corporations built on bipolar numbers, jumping up and down on digital displays, hypnotizing us
into the biggest slumber mankind has ever seen.
You have to dig pretty deep, kiddo, before you can find anything real.
We live in a kingdom of bullshit.
We really do live in a kingdom of bullshit. I think you agree. Yet that clip from Mr. Robot is an appropriate example of this week's theme, the daemon. Sure, in the scene you may wonder if Elliot, played by Rami Malek, is hallucinating his anarchist dad, played by Christian Slater. But Elliot's hallucination eventually helps him bring down the kingdom of bullshit. And let's face it, what's out there right now, the hologram of the Empire, is far less logical and benign than anything we of the broken places can concoct in any feverish delusion. Only a mad god would imagine this century. As Krishnamurti said, "It's no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society."
See, their morals, their code, it's a bad joke. Dropped at the first sign of trouble, they're only as good as the world allows them to be.
Maybe what's in our heads is a complex or shadow manifestation, a disassociative personality or two, a phantasm. Or maybe it's our higher self. Whatever it is, it's still far more real and helpful than what's currently out there. And you'll soon learn the hacks and rituals on how to access this eldritch bitch.
Is this all real? Or is it just happening inside my head?
Of course it's happening inside your head, Harry. Why should that mean that it's not real?
It's raining gnosis. Hallelujah. Welcome, and you know where you are.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was
Aeon by Gnostic Wadio, an initiation by conversation into the dark corners of myth, magic, and meaning. A crash course in cult, culture, and conspiracy. A virtuous virus invoking and informing history, holiness, and heresy. Each week I, your host Miguel Connor, commandeers your connection to bring you the most accepted and rejected scholars and provocateurs to your attention. Fun, compelling, and deeply weird, this is the blow-your-mind cocktail party conversation you always wanted to listen in on. And you deserve to be here. For you are a shining crazy diamond who can ignite the universe with so much wonder.
All our scars, our anger, our despair, it's armor. Baby, God loves the sinners best because our fire burns bright, bright, bright.
Time to meet your daemon. As Aleister Crowley wrote in Magic Without Tears, it should never be forgotten for a single moment that the central and essential work of the magicians is the attainment of the knowledge and conversation of the holy guardian angel. And as Jung said, in each of us there is another whom we do not know.
Say it.
Because we're the same person. People do it every day.
They talk to themselves. They see themselves as they'd like to be. They don't have the courage you have to just run with it.
For this aeonic pleasure, Cat Rose Nelligan materializes at the virtual Alexandria. She will discuss her kick-arse new book, Discovering Your Personal Daemon. Be on a dynamic journey on the concept of the daemon, Cat provides a host of usable exercises and techniques to get you doing the tango with your familiar, totem, or spiritual guide. Get you ready to start seeing through this kingdom of bullshit.
You're all individuals!
Yes, we're all individuals!
I love works like Cat's that are both extremely educational and practical. Anthony Peak would be proud of this work, and he cited. And so would Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas. After all, the work is written by Didymus Thomas. Didymus in Greek means twin, and Thomas in Aramaic means, yes, twin. Thus, the Gospel is the mystic dialogue between a higher and lower syzygy for the goal of spiritual wholeness. Mani had a divine twin too. Simon and Ellen are probably daemons of each other. And the earthly Jesus in the Pistis Sophia got a visit from his divine self or daemon as a child. Valentina said every person has an angelic counterpart watching over them, long before Christianity ripped him off for the concept of the guardian angel. Jung had Philemon / Simon Magus. Dick had Horse Lover Fat and others. If you ask me, I personally have an entity called the White Wolf that saved my life and soul a few times.
Last night, I woke up and I saw me staring down at myself.
Oh yeah?
I think it was a future me. Could something like that be possible? Time travel? It seemed like I was there to help me or warn me or something.
Maybe it was an alternate self communicating with you from an alternate universe.
So find your daemon, your Tyler Durden or Mr. Robot, if you want any hope in bringing down this kingdom of bullshit. They may call us crazy and evil, but in Rick and Morty, we recently found out that evil Morty isn't evil. He just wanted a way out of the countless universes ruled by his grandfather, Rick, an apt representation of the Demiurge, and the true evil that is scientism and reason run amok. As Evil Morty says, "That's why I'm evil, because I'm sick of him. And if you ever felt the same, then you're evil too." Yep, we're sick of the rulers of this age, the rulers of this terra damnata, this black iron prison.
Don't run! Nobody exists on purpose. Nobody belongs anywhere. Everybody's gonna die. Come watch TV.
I like what my friend Jim told me recently on a cool angle on Gnosis. He said, Gnosticism and Gnosis have been defined a myriad of different ways, from Valentinus to heresiological polemics to New Age prescriptions, where Gnosticism tends to be everything and its opposite. One then gets the impression that Gnosis is a bit of a moving target. This, however, isn't all far off base, since I would argue that it is both a transcendent state that eludes ephemeral attempts to describe it. All of which makes sense, given that it transcends language itself, or else can be described by a higher and more divine form of language that eludes normal human expression. Yet at the same time, this exalted information, if you will, is perhaps best understood in our world in the simplest possible terms as the knowledge of good and evil. This state tends to mutate during different epochs here on Earth. All of which is to say, basically, among other things, Gnosis also can be understood as nothing other than the apple of Eden, the ultimate deep state of consciousness, one which forever begets an awareness of the holy and unholy divide between divine knowledge above and the ugly, forbidden knowledge of the serpent experienced down below. One might say that this knowledge comes with the critical asterisk that Gnosis likewise is a form of self-knowledge that persists through the fourth dimension time unto which we've fallen, such is the nature of our fallen state in this world.
There's only one hell, Princess. The one we live in now.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
On a related mythological note, it's worth mentioning that this divine self-knowledge became only too self-evident to Adam and Eve as soon as they ate of the apple of Gnosis. I'd also add that as the world turns and modern world falls further and further down the abyss of evil towards its absolute nadir, this understanding of Gnosis becomes more and more useful to those trying to escape it. Just as it becomes only too self-evident as we relive Adam and Eve's experience, and along the same lines, it certainly seems to be the case that it has become more and more difficult, even for agnostics, to deny the ever more stark contrast between good and evil.
Why do we have to have evil?
Oh, I think it's something to do with free will. Oh. Come on then, back to creation. I mustn't waste any more time. They'll think I've lost control again and put it all down to evolution.
Well said, Jim. We need that Gnosis more than ever, and thus, we need to access our daemon to have a chance to separate the evil and good in this kingdom of bullshit.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
As a bonus for subscribers, beyond the full interview, I'll include an interview with Anthony Peak on, yes, the daemon. A perfect complement to an incredible interview with Kat. Don't miss it. First, let us have Elliot's daemon for Mr. Robot give us more wisdom, or Sophia. Write your own gospel, live your own myth.
This whole time I thought changing the world was something you did, an act you performed. Something you fought for. I don't know if that's true anymore. What if changing the world was just about being here? By showing up, no matter how many times we get told we don't belong. By staying true, even when we're shamed into being false. By believing in ourselves, even when we're told we're too different. And if we all held on to that, if we refused to budge and fall in line, if we stood our ground for long enough, just maybe, the world can't help but change around us. Even though we'll be gone, it's like Mr. Robot said, we'll always be a part of Elliot Alderson, and we'll be the best part, because we're the part that always showed up. We're the part that stayed. We're the part that changed him. And who wouldn't be proud of that?
This is the AM Byte interview. And with us, we have the pleasure of being joined by Kat Rose Nelligan to discuss her great book, Discovering Your Personal Daemon. Kat, how are you? And thanks for coming on AM Byte.
I'm good, thank you. It's an honor to get to chat to you and be on this side of the mic for once.
Yes, I love what you're doing in the podcast you are putting out. And I know I call it daemon, but you call it daimon, right? Like diamond.
And I think it's the difference between the Greek pronunciation and maybe the Latinized, the Roman version.
Uh-huh.
But I've heard kind of people who spell it D-A-I-M-O-N say Daimon, and then the D-A-E-M-O-N is more like Daemon. I just get confused because I end up thinking about Matt Damon, so I choose the Daimon.
Oh no, that's terrible. Yeah, you don't want to summon that. Or maybe you really like him, Goodwill Hunting, or something like that.
That's really what the book is about, summoning Matt Damon.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I like. I like books that are well-researched, but also usable, that you can say, okay, I learned a lot, but I can tap into this for my daily life or add it to my spiritual exercises. So this is great. And we certainly want to talk about this, and I'm sure we'll just scratch the surface. So Daemon or Daimon, this is not a hill you will die on, right?
Right. Or Daon. Yeah.
Whatever it is. All right. And with us, we've got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you and how will you pronounce it?
Oh, okay. Well, I prefer Daimon because diamonds are a girl's best friend, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Matt Daemon.
Actually, I say Daemon, I think.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, awesome. Well, speaking of Daemons or Daimons, how did you come to write this book? And I guess you might say, not surprising many people, it was your Daemon who actually kind of jolted you to light a fire under your ass to get this book going, right? You lost a lot of material.
Exactly. So, and you kind of touched on it maybe at the beginning when you were saying about books that are meant to be used in a very practical way, that we can integrate them into our daily life. And that's kind of what I was trying to do with my research on the Daimon. I was reading a lot and trying to kind of get to grips with it. But a lot of the materials that I was reading, you know, I had to really kind of concentrate, and not that that's a bad thing. It's probably a good thing for us to concentrate from time to time. But basically, I found myself kind of having to reread things, cross-reference things. And I was just like, how do I actually integrate this amazing, interesting information into my daily life? And so that's how the book kind of began. It began as a way for me to process these, what I was learning as a personal project. And then, as you mentioned, I had a kind of moment earlier this year. So it was like kind of gathered probably as much information as I felt like I needed at the time.
Right.
And I was talking about the idea of publishing it with friends. But then when I was updating my laptop earlier this year, I lost most of what I'd, well, the entire Scrivener project. So if you know that writing app, somehow I just lost everything. And I
the
had
worst
some
feeling, the worst feeling in the world. We've all been there, right?
Well, and it's almost like the what is it, like the process of grief, where you're first right. in denial and then it's rage. And but luckily I had enough saved. But in that moment where I was like, do I try to piece this back together with the scraps that I still have? Or do I just give up the ghost and hope that my Daimon doesn't leave me in a rage? I took it as a sign from my Daimon to really commit to it. And yeah, that's how it came about. And I think it came about a lot quicker than I expected. I expected to still be working on it and probably for another year or so. But
yeah, because it was early 2021. So you lost everything and you really just got back on the saddle and bam, here we are, Halloween season, and you've got this coming out.
Exactly. Yeah. And I put a lot of things on pause, and I'm not normally like that. I sort of am somebody who likes spinning a lot of plates. But this time I think my Daimon just said, Kat, I need your time. Buckle down.
Yeah. We'll definitely find out what the Daemon demands from us. And when did you, have you always been a heretic, or how was your evolution into the more heterodox arenas?
Good point. I mean, I love the way you put that. Quite recent, basically, I would say that I became more interested in things like astrology. For example, I was interested in like Myers-Briggs personality typology.
Right.
You know that? Do you know what your type is? I'm curious.
It's the most rare one. I just did it about a month ago.
Everyone says they have the most rare one, Miguel.
Oh, okay. Well, the website just shows you that no matter what you get, so to make you feel I don't know, introvert, intuitive, something. Yeah, I have to look it up.
Yeah. And well, I was fascinated by that. And I did find that a very helpful test to take. And I learned a lot. I was talking to a skeptic friend, and, you know, skeptic with a capital S, this is kind of part of her calling in life is to, right, you know, question things. And
of course,
well, I'd found a book that kind of mixed astrology with something called the Enneagram. And I was like, this is just a really wild book, Rebecca. Like, it says a lot about myself that that's true, but surely this isn't scientific. And she was like, well, no, it's not. But, you know, neither is your Myers-Briggs stuff. And that really just turned my world upside down. Rather than thinking, well, I should ditch the Myers-Briggs stuff, I was like, I should take on the astrology stuff because it doesn't need to be scientific for it to be useful. And then I kind of just started in the same way that I found your podcast. You know, I look up in my podcast app any topic that I'm interested in, and boom, you'll find you know, lots of stuff, not all useful, but some amazing podcasts. And, you know, one of them was the astrology podcast. And from there, I kind of developed a real love for the study of the stars. And that wasn't that long ago. That was maybe 2017. And my world has sort of expanded a lot since then, in different ways.
Well, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I have taken the Enneagram, and I forgot. Oh, my God. I forgot what it is. But I got one. And then the person I was working with, a Jungian, she told me that by working on my dreams, that I had created this persona. And I was actually another type. I think I'm the, oh, wow. Yeah, I was farther away. I think I got the investigator, but I'm actually the enthusiast, which is interesting. But she was able to show that sometimes we do create, especially if you've had, let's say, a traumatic childhood or something like that, you will create a persona around you to protect yourself, and you can actually fool the Enneagram. So just a little tidbit out there for everybody.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And it's kind of the reason why I've sort of landed on astrology, because you can't lie. You cast the chart and it is what it is. Right. Yeah.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Well, awesome. Awesome. Glad to see you have joined this this party of blasphemy and inner knowing and all that good stuff, because it just doesn't end. And when did you first hear about the daemon?
And that was through astrology. So
through astrology,
I was on my way to an astrology conference, and this episode of a podcast came on, and it was talking about a technique where you find, let's say, the strongest planet in your birth chart. And that was related, according to some early astrologers, to the nature of your personal daimon. And I think I'd read not that long ago James Hillman's book called The Soul's Code. Don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually seeing how that concept of this guide of destiny basically could actually be found in the birth chart was like amazing to me. Really spoke to everything that I was interested in. And the more I researched it through another book called The Daimon in Hellenistic Astrology, the more I saw that actually everything about astrology, like the foundations of it, has its kind of roots in this concept of the daimon. Yeah. So cool. That set me off.
Yeah. Awesome. And, why don't we talk before we even get into defining and the history of the daemon and all that good stuff? What are some of the main misconceptions of the daemon? And you do list them in your book. I guess we should start that. First of all, it's not a demon.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's not a demon. There are different ways of, you know, seeing whether or not the daemon got confused with the demon. But a lot of people point their finger at early Christianity. And so often when I say it to people, they kind of, not everyone, but a lot of people will think, oh, that doesn't sound too, you know, it sounds a bit menacing when you start talking about finding a daemon. But it's not the same. I would say that there is a dark side to the daemon. Mm-hmm. But for example, if you're not tending to it, if you're not paying attention to it, that seems to be when we see a more demonic side to it. That would be one. Another misconception would be the daemon is not here to do your bidding. So, and there are different approaches to this, but for me, the way I understand the personal daemon is that it's really the other way around. The daemon is here to show us what it wants us to do. You know, we might be steering the ship, but really it's the daemon that has the map. effectively. Another misconception would be the daimon can be identified by or understood like in full through astrology, through identifying the strongest planet in your chart. And this is something that I was really hoping would be true. And I do believe that identifying the strongest planet in a birth chart can speak to either a kind of daimon, or it can hint at the nature of your daimon potentially. But it's also, you know, it's not the only way to find the daimon. And I think my kind of like analytical mind really wanted to go there and really wanted astrology to be the one and only answer to my connection with the daimon. But the more I looked into it, the more that doesn't seem to be the case fully. And the final misconception that I outline is this kind of personal reminder to myself, really, which is once the daimon is discovered, your work with the daimon is complete. And to me, it's
you
really
just don't carry it through the threshold like a wedding, and that's it, honey. Make my dinner and all that. I'm done.
Rub my feet, daimon. Yeah. Not daimon. Wait.
The real work starts, basically.
Exactly. And maybe that's book two. I mean, I don't know, but I am interested in what it looks like to actually walk, like live a life with the daimon and develop that relationship.
Exactly. And for the audience, I know I'm going to geek out a bit on Gnosticism, but I think the word demon or daimon, doesn't it mean cat helper in Greek, the original?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, daimon, one of the ways that I'd heard daimon, it's been translated as literally the word destiny, which I find fascinating.
Oh.
And also it comes from the root da, which means to distribute, as in like to distribute lots, which is something I kind of touch on in the book. But I hadn't heard the helper one. That's really interesting.
That's what I've heard in a few places, but yours works too. And it should be mentioned, that's kind of how when the Gospel of Judas came out, the first translations had Jesus calls Judas his daimon. And scholars were like, this cements it. Judas is actually in a holy destiny. He was a necessary sacrifice for Christ to be, to finish his mission here on the material world. But then once they dated it to the, late second century, the other scholars realized that the word daimon had already switched in not just Christianity, but also Gnosticism in general, to a negative term. So it was realized that Jesus was actually scolding Judas. Nothing had changed.
That's so interesting. I hadn't heard that. And this is why I love having these conversations, because I'm learning stuff about the daimon all the time. But I liked that original concept, which speaks more to Judas, even though he was presenting himself as a difficult character in his life. It was still what destiny wanted, basically. And destiny daimon, same thing.
Yeah, and they're still debating, of course, if they can date it earlier. That's a key, right? If you can date it earlier when the term was positive, then you've got the argument. But right now, if you date it later, see how a word simply switches in a culture immediately. Interesting. So we talked about the daimon being helper. Let's look at some other definitions so we can get some context. I like how you bring an array of characters throughout history. It's amazing how many great figures relied on the daimon or the genius to really help them with who they were, to make an impact on history. And one of them is Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, who considered the daimon to be, quote, something which reveals itself only in contradictions, and which therefore cannot be encompassed under any concept, still less under a word. So that one, I love that one, because that sort of threw me for a loop.
Well, and I love that too, because it was something that in the original version of the book, I had a whole kind of section where I was trying to get that point across, which the daimon is an intermediary character. It's not one or the other. And I just love that. I love that it's a liminal creature and it resists defining. And I guess where I ended up with the book was, it's kind of like a it is actually like a diamond in that you're right. kind of turning it around in your hand. You're looking at the different facets of it. And yeah, that's why that we'll always have people arguing about it, I guess, because it's hard to pin down.
Well, yeah, it's like a concept, like the concept of the soul, or we were talking about Neoplatonism before the interview, Kat, the concept of the nous. It's right. 10 different scholars and Platonic philosophers will give you 10 different words, or gnosis, or other thing. I think that's what's great, right? Because it's dynamic. It's a living thing. It's like you said, it's liminal and it changes as we change.
Yeah. And if you want, this puts the personal, I think, in personal daimon. And I am trying to invite people to take in these ideas. And while I don't think very deep into any one of them, hopefully I'm giving people a bit of a buffet of concepts surrounding the daimon, and they can take from that what they want and feels true for them. And hopefully their daimon will show them the rest.
Yeah, and because I mean, right now, just as we've spoken in 15 minutes, we've said the daemon is a helper, the daemon is destiny, the daemon is our higher selves, the daemon is an ontological figure. So people's heads are probably spinning like, who is this guy? And it could be all of the above. I like the destiny one because obviously, like you said, and something that I've really hammered on this show is we all have a higher purpose and we all have a destiny, and our daemon is that destiny, and it will facilitate our destiny, and it will bring us a world of pain if we resist that destiny.
Exactly. And if this is probably one of my, if not, you know, my favorite concept of the daemon. And recently it was confirmed in a copy of Plato's Republic that I found. Or stole from my dad, but basically it has the myth of Ur in it, and that's one of these key texts that really inspired me when it came to the daimon. And in it, I was scanning for the bit where it gets to the daimons and the souls being either choosing or getting allotted a daimon, and I couldn't see it anywhere. And I realized what I was reading was destiny instead of daimon. Right. That the translator was actually using destiny instead of daimon, which I thought was quite literal, an exchange. Yeah, and this kind of concept of meeting your destiny and getting to know it is really central to astrology. And not just that, I think for me, it's kind of become this way that I deal with life, a worldview, basically. And I don't know, I mean, destiny itself is kind of hard to define, but there's a quote in the book from this psychologist Alexandra Lowen. I don't know if I have the exact one, but he's effectively saying fate and destiny are different things, and fate is more likened to what you are and destiny is more like what you become. And he says, like, you know, fish are fated to swim and birds are fated to fly, but that is not their destiny. And so I think daimon destiny can be a helpful way to a lens through which we can see our own fate and maybe become better friends with it.
Yeah, well, really well said. And for the audience, the myth of Ur, I don't know if you want to explain more, but that's sort of Plato's central idea of how we are reincarnated, but for some dumb reason, we forget our past lives or when we choose our life, right? Or the daemon chooses our life, or we choose our next life.
So it's something like this. So the idea is that the souls have been given lots, so they're given these like numbers, like it's like a lottery literally, and then they go before Lachesis, and that can be translated as one special lot or portion of fate. She was one of the fates literally, and she sent with each as the and I'm quoting now from James Hillman, and she sent with each as the guardian of his life and the fulfiller of his choice the daimon that had been chosen. So it suggests that we choose our daimon as well as our lives. It's almost like we've got these little scripts that we get to pick from before we come into like incarnation, and we get our little daimon that is going to help remind us of that because we forget. And I've just loved that whole story.
Yeah, again, it's an incredible story. And for the audience, if you want to know, Jungian Ideas Are Beyond, James Hillman is the man to go to, or researcher, writer. He's just an incredible, a font of wisdom, I would say. And on the other hand, another image that really spoke to you, and I was like, oh my God, this is also a very good aha moment for me too. And that's in the Bible, when Jacob is wrestling the angel, and you give us the daemon side of it, if you would.
Yeah, and I didn't know this story particularly well, but especially when you look at the artwork that depicts this moment with Jacob wrestling with the angel, or the daemon, and there's a moment where, so they've been wrestling all night, and Jacob's like, tell me your name. And the angel is like, no, but I'm going to give you your name. And this is, I come to this because I was kind of questioning the concept of naming your daemon or finding its name. And I love this story of a kind of like resistance between, you know, whether the angel represents, you know, Jacob's daemon, or like a kind of a personal face of God. I just love that it resisted itself being named.
No, it makes sense. He's wrestling with his own his higher self, his ego, or destiny, either one. Yeah, once he stopped, things went very well for the king, for Israel in general. So good angle. And but when the daemon first started in ancient Greece, it wasn't as Byzantine or Baroque as you and I are talking about. It just, the daemon was just sort of like a small spirit, a helper.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of thought of as a household god, the Agathos daimon, or the good spirit. And it was kind of pictured in a kind of like Zeus or Jupiter way, in that it was a god of abundance and good things happening to you. And you would, you know, pray to that. It had a kind of homely feeling to it. It was, you know, and I say in the book, it was basically very ambiguous until we get to Plato. And, you know, we see daemon spirits in lots of different cultures and throughout time. But, you know, maybe I'm going off a little bit here, but even in, I think, is it Hesiod or is it Homer? But it's the word daemon is just used like kind of all over the place, and it's used to describe different concepts, everything from, yeah, here it is. In Homer's Iliad, the gods of Mount Olympus can be called daimons, and Aphrodite leads the way ahead of Helen as a daimon. A hero may rush headlong like a daimon and still be called godlike. It's just kind of loosey-goosey at this point, yeah.
Yeah, Kat, do you think that's because of this aspect of the daemon being part of our, you know, ourselves coming from the unconscious, an interface between ourselves and the greater universe?
Yeah, I like that. A part of us. And I mean, I find it hard to even feel confident in talking about the unconscious, because I'm not like a Jungian scholar or anything. And
we all have that, one.
Well, that idea of the daemon being part of us was something that I also kind of, it was one of the last things I wrote about, because I had people, including my skeptical friend, being like, could you at least consider the daemon as not being so separate to you, but really being part of your psyche, or part of your even higher self?
If we listen to it and say, if we listen to it regularly and follow its guidance and so forth, then it is part of us, because our actions are somewhat predicated on what we're hearing, right?
Yes. Yeah, completely. Completely.
Awesome. Well, let's get back to history. Also, too, you say that the Chaldean influence is very important to the ancient Chaldeans.
Yeah, yeah. And that's partly because we see, you know, the daemon spirits, they were just very present in ancient Chaldea, I think that's how you'd say it. And at the same time, and you kind of had like, you know, good spirits, evil spirits, and at the same time, they weren't so personal. They weren't connected to one's individual soul. You could be possessed by them though. And that idea of like possession by spirits, to me, that becomes really interesting, partly because of this book I read. I think it's called Anger, Madness, and Creativity by Stephen Diamond, which is a great name to talk about the diamond. Yeah. And he kind of goes into these different creatives throughout time being possessed in that way by their diamonds or, yeah, all their unconscious. I mean, you could totally call it that, part of that anyway. So yeah, it's kind of like they have these maybe not fully good, not fully evil, but they have these kind of almost trickster-like effects. And I think any creative who has spent any real time, let's say, in their artwork or writing or dance has felt possessed on some level. And I think that really does speak to the daimonic to me, yeah.
That's for sure. And also, I didn't know, but you say the jinn, who people could associate with the daemon, is actually pre-Islamic. This was around the area of Arabia and Mesopotamia. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really hard for me to kind of like track that back. I just really didn't find a whole lot on that. But then I did speak to actually an astrologist, Sam Reynolds, who has a lot more of a background in Islam and really looked into the jinn. And it's thought that, I believe, like, you can have a jinn and you can have a personal angel. So in that way, it's still kind of like split. And jinn, again, some would say that they're sort of ambivalent figures. They're neither good nor bad. But I think some would also say that they're purely difficult creatures. Yeah, they're the created from smokeless fire, which I love. I love that idea.
Yeah, indeed. And could you tell the audience who the Agathios daemon is? Very important figure in ancient Greece.
Yes. And that was the idea that there was a kind of a household god that was associated with abundance. It was paired with something called Agathos or Agatha Touke, which is related to fortune. And basically, Agathos daimon was like the kind of masculine figure, and Touke or fortune was the feminine figure. And so you have destiny and fortune, or destiny and fate, kind of came as a pair. And that idea in the book, right. I that was one of my favorite things to write about, because I just found that really, really beautiful that they actually had embodied these concepts in gods, in household gods that you would pray to. And for example, on the day after the new moon, that's when you would leave out an offering to the Agathos daimon.
Very cool. And yes, you had the daemon running, or the little daemons running around doing their little animus things in ancient times. But then came Socrates, right? And he sort of completely changed the history of the daemon, didn't he?
Thank goodness. Yes, exactly. like I said, so up until this point, at least in that kind of like Greco-Egyptian world, it was still quite you heard about daimons, but it wasn't until you get to Socrates where you really get this idea of a personal daimon, or what he called the daimonion, which I believe was it's like the sort of neutral term. I don't know enough about like the Greek language, but and he was just well known for having this kind of inner voice, or this being that showed him the way. And the other interesting part to Socrates's daimon or daimonion was that it wouldn't tell him what to do, it would just tell him what not to do.
Oh, really?
yeah. And I just thought that was quite funny. And there was a bit where I read about the daimon kind of taking a dislike to certain people and wouldn't like talk to all, or wouldn't give advice for all of Socrates's acquaintances. So yeah, and it was the reason that Socrates went so willingly, allegedly, to his death, because the daimon did not prevent him from doing that.
Yeah, it was part of his higher purpose. This was written in the stars, and that's what he should have done.
That was his destiny, exactly. And that kind of put the idea of the daimon being this protective figure, that kind of like, I kind of crossed that one off my list at that point, because I realized, okay, the daimon's going to protect us, but only if it serves our destiny, only if it serves the kind of script that the daimon has been given. So that's something to remember.
Yeah. But the, his daemon also could tell him, like, predict the weather and things like that. Sort of, on the other hand, it still was kind of a familiar spirit.
Yeah. I love that. Yes. So kind of accompany kind of whisper the answers to the maths quiz in his ear.
It was kind of an ancient version of the iPhone or the Android. Yeah. He could look at it and say, oh, okay.
Alexa, I mean, Daimon. Yeah.
That would be a cool name for the next AI. Maybe the next one that ends up conquering humanity will be called Daemon or Daimon.
Feels right.
So then we have Socrates sort of innovates or really sees the cosmos in a broader sense. Then come, obviously, I've written and in the introduction, I talk a little bit about the concepts of Gnosticism, which jive with your concepts. And you have, for example, the prophet Mani saw his divine twin, his higher self, visited him and said, you have to go on this destiny. In the Pista Sophia, Jesus has the same thing. As a child, his twin comes to him and says, hey, we got to, you know, this is what's going to happen to you. And there's many other instances. The Gospel of Thomas seems like it doesn't seem like it's Thomas and Jesus. It seems like it's one person having a conversation. One's the higher, one's the lower. One's telling him, this is the nature of the universe. This is the nature of waking up and all that stuff. I guess before we get to Neoplatonism and before we even get, since I just talked about twins, before we get to calling on a daemon and all that, the daemon can appear as a twin to us, or sometimes is described as our twin soul or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I'd like to have more time to look in more to that side of things and check out the Gospel of Thomas more, because I found that idea of Jesus and Thomas and this idea that, am I right in thinking that you would sort of aspire to be like Thomas and thereby kind of it would that be a kind of like theurgy? Sorry, I'm asking questions because I don't know enough.
No. Okay. Hey, questions are great. I mean, it's like the word Thomas in Aramaic means twin, and then he calls him Didymos. Didymos in Greek means twin. So you're getting a twin energy going on here.
Right.
So, and Jesus is sort of having this conversation with Thomas and telling him, listen to what I have to say and you will not taste death. And then come the sayings, which on the nature of reality, the nature of the world, the nature of humanity and all that good stuff. So there's a daemon, Eledon or whatever you call it, dynamic going on there.
Yeah. And one of the stories, I want to say that this was in Anthony Peake's book, about, oh gosh, my mind's gone blank now. The twin, who was it? It was an author. It was the poet. Yeah. Shelley.
Shelley. Yeah. We said it. Yes.
And I love that. This story where, he was visited basically, on a boat, I think his boat, by basically his identical twin. It looked exactly like him, and it just said to him, how long do you intend to be happy? Which just sends shivers up my spine, because it just freaks me the hell out. And it's even more freaky when you realize that I think less than a week later, Shelley was drowned at sea.
So
in that way you have these stories of doubles, and I love that idea of the divine double. You can definitely, I think there's a great book called The Divine Double, which might be worth checking out if people are interested.
Yeah, and I know Anthony talks about in his book that there in German lore, there is the idea of the doppelganger. If you see your doppelganger, you're going to die. Yeah, but I think there are other traditions, again, just talked about the Gnostics, that's not necessarily true. I had an acquaintance who said he walked by and he saw his double. And I was thinking, oh shit, you're dead, dude. That's what I really thought that. But then something really big happened to him, like good. So it's not, don't live in Germany and see your twin, I guess, or go on a boat.
The lesson of the story, right. Yeah. And I guess just that idea that, because I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, is the daemon like our shadow self, or what we're kind of denying from ourselves? And you know, that kind of makes me think a bit about the twin, that it's p- part of us, but maybe like the disavowed part of us. That's an interesting way of seeing it potentially.
Yeah, and it also makes you wonder, why are we so fragmented? You think whatever's creating this universe could have just said, hey, you meet Zach, you be Damon and human at the same time instead of all these structures. But speculating here, maybe it's just the universe is not, you know, it's far from a good, perfect construct. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe on some level we wanted it to be that way. I don't know.
Exactly. Wanted the challenge.
Yeah. Be boring.
Well, the ego, right? The ego wants to defend itself from anything that's considered unusual or make you antisocial, or especially in this society where diamond people will hear demon, devil, and so forth.
Yeah, no, completely.
And Neoplatonism came along and they even made it more Baroque, didn't they, Kat? I mean, didn't they divide the daemon into three? Astrological, spiritual, and vocational?
Yeah.
Vocational is like what? Your HR department of heaven or something like that? Human resources?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
That's a bad joke, it's almost
it's good analogy. Yeah, and I'm actually, that might have even been Agrippa who said that. But basically, it's that idea that on a sort of more base level, you've got a vocational daimon, which is kind of telling you, hey, here's what you should do with matter. Next level up is your astrological daimon, which, I'm not really quite sure what the role of that was meant to be, but that's the one that you would be able to identify in your birth chart. And then you've kind of got the spiritual daimon, which I think would be more closely aligned to having some kind of like uniting with the divine. But even within the tradition, as I understood it, Iamblichus, a Neoplatonist, and Porphyry, they had a bit of a disagreement. Talking to Jeffrey Kufman, he was kind of saying, no, they aren't disagreeing as much as people think, and that's something that I need to explore more. But the way I understood it, Porphyry wrote about and really tried to gather like older texts, like texts that we don't have the copies of, concepts of techniques, outlines saying, okay, this is how you figure out the daimon in your birth chart. Whereas Iamblichus believed it was only through theurgy that you would make contact with your personal daimon.
Yeah, well, I think, that makes sense, but nothing wrong with disagreeing, especially with the Neoplatonists had that swagger, just as many of the Gnostics, they had no problem disagreeing with each other vehemently or so. Jeffrey's book, both Living Theurgy and Theurgia's Book of Hours, are great, and he has some good sections on the Neoplatonic daemon.
Yeah, and he breaks it down, and it's like I found it just very difficult, as I think most people do, to read the original text. But Kufman really goes into it and makes that idea of one of the things I found was, you know, I don't know if I've got time to dedicate to some of these rich. I'm basically a lazy theurgist. I wouldn't be able to dedicate enough time to it. But if you're up for it, he's the person to.
Yeah, you're a drive-through theurgist. Instead of going to the restaurant, you're going to go to the window and grab what you need.
And what else on that? The theurgists. Did you want to get into the astrology? Would that be too deep? Maybe.
No, we want to get into the astrology in a few. You can go as deep as you want because I'm terrible at astrology. Vance can hang with astrology, but our audience is extremely versed on it. So just take off on it. Don't worry about me. I can find out nuances in the Gospel of Judas, but when it comes to the stars, I'm like, okay. I just pay people to or ask friends to help me out with that. But we will get into the astrology, but the other question I had for you, Kat, is Jung had a daemon, and you talk about, obviously, Philemon, his famous guide and active imagination discovery, which gave us the Red Book, which is the platform for all Jungian ideas that are still very well, in the occult world, very influential, impactful, and all that. And Philemon then becomes Simon Magus, and we find out that Philemon is Simon Magus, but so forth. But then you also, a figure that you talk about in your book is Philip K. Dick, mm-hmm. and Philip K. Dick seemed to have many daemons, or at least he seems to have fragmented daemons, like Horse Lover Fat, and then he had Valis. He had different versions of one daemon. Is that, do you, that's not uncommon, is it? I mean, I'm talking about two big Gnostic figures of the 20th century. One had one daemon, the other one had many.
Yeah, and my experience has been, it's having that I have one daemon, but it shows itself in a couple of different forms. So again, I wouldn't want to tell people like this is how it is, but my experience has been, okay, these don't feel like different beings, or even a fragmented one. It just feels like the daemon kind of showing itself in different ways. So I think that could be an option. One thing that a lot of people were asking me, like, does it evolve? Like, does it change with you? And that's one thing which I can't really.
Good question, though. Yeah.
Yeah, and it would kind of make sense on some level, but that would be like, for me, that would be like saying that plot line that you agreed to before you came here, that story is constantly changing, which kind of, I don't know, it screws with the idea that mm-hmm. there is actually a script that you kind of signed off at some point.
Well, we're changing, right? We're changing, so as we change, that maybe we can accept more and more of what the diamond's actually trying to tell us.
Possibly. I just wonder if we're changing, that too is part of the script. Do you know what I mean? So like that was always going to happen. We were always going to
free will versus determinism.
And, yeah, and I do make, I mean, in fact, in a way, I see the daemon as related to free will on some level. I don't so much call it free will as I call it like the way we meet our fate. And that involves, you know, that involves free will, basically. And there was an astrologer, Robert Schmidt, who kind of referred to the daemon as speaking to a kind of our intentionality, or the moment before we make the decision. And so anyway, what I'm trying to say there is I do think the daemon is very closely related to our free will. The other thing that I've heard is, was it like, I think it was the story with Plotinus where he thinks he's summoning his daemon, but a god shows up in its place.
Oh yeah.
And something that Iamblichus wrote was that you could actually, your daemon could actually give over its job to another daemon or even a god. So while it may appear to us that we're getting an evolved version of the daemon, or our daemon's changing, our daemon could have just like given the gig to somebody else, which I find funny. Like, I've had enough of this guy. Like, this job was not what I signed up for.
This human is an idiot. He's never going to learn. I'm calling in the gods.
Yeah. So yeah, that wasn't really an answer. That was an exploration of different possibilities, but yeah, different ideas.
Yeah, especially when you get into fate and free will, that your heads will just start spinning and spinning. So why don't we talk a little about something that we all want and we all need, and that's creativity. Isn't the daemon very associated with creativity? In fact, the daemon might be, the muse might just be a cipher for the daemon. And you speak of a lot of artists who definitely had and were conscious of having a daemon, like Blake, and we just spoke about Goethe, Philip K. Dick. And I love, you write how Kipling's daemon told him, that's how anal it was, that he only wanted black ink when he wrote.
Yeah, I love that. I love how much of a diva Kipling's daemon was. And I think it was Elizabeth Gilbert's TED Talk where she kind of is kind of rallying creatives to accept that their creative work, or at least the good stuff, isn't theirs, that it's not coming from them. And again, I think that it feels true for a lot of us. It feels that when we're doing our best work, it's coming from somewhere else. And sometimes like we might get inspiration through dreams, and I can't remember who it was, but might have even been that sci-fi writer. Anyway, I can't quite remember the name. Who's, it's kind of like, well, how can I take any credit for this work? Because it's like I'm just relaying what came to me in a dream. Like, I didn't choose that dream. It didn't feel like I chose it. So it almost feels like you're a fraud in that way. And there's definitely an argument to be made for framing our creative source as the daimon or the genius or the muse, because it kind of takes the pressure off it in many ways. I think it encourages us to be humble, if that's possible for a creative. But yeah, that's I think part of it. And this idea that, and something I explore when I'm kind of thinking about this is, well, what would our daimons need to show up? And, you know, talk about Kipling with the pens. I mean, I've had weird things about certain pens, and what's all making sense now. I'm not just a really anal person who has a thing for a certain pilot pen, but yeah. So, and I think one of the other favorite stories of mine was Maya Angelou, who would go to a hotel room and write every day there for several hours, and would take all the paintings off the walls and just basically like really grim, maybe motel rooms, and then would go home, and you know, she wouldn't sleep there. It was just, that was the space that she had to be in, this kind of neutral space, in order to write.
Yeah, that is certainly artists have done. And yes, I mean, I know, and obviously you've heard that all of us have like an article or a book, and for the most part, you're just working so hard. You know, it's every sentence and paragraph is so hard. But then there's that one book or article or piece of art, it just flows out of you, and you're going, "What the hell happened? And how come I can't do it more often?"
Exactly. And that was an interesting thing to explore, because it kind of gave me more like sympathy for myself, where I was like, well, that's okay. The daimon has a will of its own. You know, maybe that's part of this. Maybe this work wasn't meant to happen today in this way. It kind of just chills you out a bit, I think, if you struggle with like creative block, like so many of us do.
Exactly. And as I'll keep repeating, your book has a lot of usable exercises, tips, rituals, if you want to follow it. It's not like you just say, hey, here it is, go find your daimon. And one of them you have, Kat, is when people ask, or maybe it was a rhetorical question of you and your daimon, but how do you know that the daimon is guiding us in our art? And you have, I think, what, 5 points?
Yes.
I have them here if you want, or do you want to tackle them? I have them written here.
If you have them, that would help. I'm just trying to remember what.
Unless I do have them here. Let's see. Number one is schedule it.
Yes.
Number two is open and close your space. Number three is incubate. And number four is always be prepared. You want to speak to those?
Yes, definitely. So that first one about scheduling it. And this isn't fun. I think a lot of the time, people want to think that, oh, I'll create the thing when the inspiration strikes me. And I think, you know, for some people that really works, and heck, that there are definitely times when the daimon does strike us, let's say. But the idea that you kind of like set a date with your daimon to kind of show up, and I think showing the daimon that kind of respect and dedication to whatever it is that you ultimately want its help with, I think is, well, it's just polite. So that's the first bit. Opening and closing your space. And this idea of ritualizing the creative space was something that, I hadn't really considered. And I realized I wasn't really, that part of what I was understanding about my daimon was that it really wanted that kind of respect and dedication. And that also meant boundaries, because... there's this quote here from David Paul Kirkpatrick. It's important to put a lid on it, just as Aladdin did, like with the genie. You know, he calls his genie up, and when he was through, Aladdin shut the lamp. So I think it makes sense that the daimon, especially if we feel like our daimon has got this kind of dark or demonic side to it, or just a sort of trickster like side to it, containing that is, I think, quite wise. So for me, like I've got like a candle burning, and I always light that candle when I sit down to read for a client or paint or anything else. And then the third one was Incubate. So this this was helpful because, again, sometimes we're just not feeling it. And in fact, since finishing writing the book, it feels like my diamond has gone very quiet. I think it's, it's taking a break, and it's kind of saying, Kat, you can take a break as well. So I think having that incubation period, realizing that there are times in our life where at least it feels like the daimon is dormant, that's also okay, especially if we have been working very hard. And then four, always be prepared. So this is when the daimon, you know, maybe it didn't show up for your date, and, you know, it's been several days and you think it's got the hump with you, as they say over here. And then you're out for a walk and it strikes. So being prepared, whether you have, you know, a pen and paper with you.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So it's great ideas I have in the worst places, and I can't write them down, and I get home and I'm like, shit.
Yes, they go. And I'm like that with dreams a lot. And I mentioned dreams a bit in the book, but I've been really trying hard to get myself to write my dreams down in the morning. But it's so hard to remember.
And so these days you are giving lessons, or you do work with clients to help them bring out their daimon or make contact with their daimon, right?
Yes. And it would, you know, we go through those astrology techniques that I mentioned. And what happens, especially when you get to work with somebody, is a whole lot of other things kind of come out, which the daimon seems to respond well to those conversations. So that's one thing I do. It's basically an extension of my astrology practice. Yeah.
Good, good. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's your homepage? And it'll be in the show notes, but for those of you who are just listening to audio.
Yes. So it's catroseastrology.com. And that's cat with a C. So like the animal.
And your book, where can they find out about your book?
You'll be able to see links to that at my website, catroseastrology.com. At the moment, there's a Kickstarter running to support the book and, you know, pick up different rewards if you want to dive deeper into the daimon. So that's going really well. It's really funded. So I'm really chuffed with that. And that should be running up until Halloween.
Oh, well, congratulations on that. And now that it's funded, when will the book be physically or digitally available? I have a copy and I'm very happy. So
yeah,
I'm going to pretend I care about everybody else now.
They'll have to wait until November 1st, and then the hardback will be coming out. Well, the hardback is only available at the moment through the Kickstarter. I'm trying to figure out other ways of getting that out on a bigger scale, because posting books for the rest of my life doesn't sound so fun.
This is your first book, right?
Second, actually, but second technically, but first in this kind of area. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, congratulations. And yeah, November 1st, that's All Saints Day and the Day of the Dead in Mexico. So
interesting. Felt appropriate for the diamond.
How appropriate. Yeah, it'll be very happy. So awesome. Well, you heard it here, audience. I enjoyed the book. It's very educational. It's insightful, and you will get a lot of practical techniques. And even if, again, you don't know astrology, there's a lot of good stuff for just general mysticism and finding all about your daimon. So we are at the end. First of all, Vance, thanks for keeping us company.
Oh, I loved hearing about the daimon, and what a great subject, Kat. So I wish you well with your book.
I appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Yes, I think it'll do very well, and you will make a daimonic difference in the world. But Kat, thank you very much for coming on Aeon By. Good luck with all your projects, and we look forward to our next time.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
And there you have it, you shining crazy diamonds. The first part of our interview with Kat. Can you feel your daimon bursting out of your chest like a baby xenomorph? You will soon. In our second part, Vance gives us his famous speech on the porcelain gods. Then Kat grants us a robust section on finding your daimon in astrology, and this includes creating your charts and much more. You'll be surprised at the birth charts of notable people we discuss. Then she'll talk about how to name and treat your daimon, as well as other techniques to finding your daimon beyond astrology.
We'll also discuss Damon-themed films. It was a lot of fun. And much more. As mentioned in the intro, and as a bonus for subscribers, I'll include an interview with Anthony Peak on, yes, The Damon. A perfect complement to an incredible interview. Don't miss it. If you find value in this content, in this Red Pill Cafeteria, please subscribe, and you'll get this and all interviews in their entirety. Only $6.99 a lunar cycle, or whatever you want to pledge on Patreon. You can now subscribe to the easy-to-use private RSS feed from Red Circle. No matter where you subscribe, it will cost you about $1 per episode. And that's a deal of many lifetimes. Membership to AB Prime or Patreon mid-levels includes full access to more than 500 quality shows. You'll get an invitation to the Inner Sanctum of Gnosis Facebook group and my Discord channel. Even support in the form of some shekel donations to PayPal or the US Mail really, really helps. There is also a link on the show notes if you want to donate via Stripe now. I also have the merch store and an Amazon wish list if you want to help there. Finding Hermes is going strong, and so are our virtual Alexandra exclusive private meetings that include exercises loyal to the ancient Gnostics and a monthly intimate Q&A. If you want to understand and experience Gnosticism and its full impact and liberating secrets, become an official citizen of the virtual Alexandria. I've recently done presentations on Gnostic astral ascents, the Jungian inner journey, the secrets of the serpent Gnostics, and sex magic in Alexandrian Gnosticism. Quite a variety, eh? And you'll have access to all of these and future ones. Whew, I know that's a lot, but I gotta stay spread out as the Archons are always trying to cancel me and my Damon. I'm also on Rockfin if crypto is your bag. If you need help with all of these choices, just message my ass. I'm always here to help, and I truly appreciate your help. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.